I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Transportation to order. The time is 1:34, February 13th, 2008. It's an unlucky day. That's why the 13th, that's why the chairman's late. Blame it on the clock. And with me today is Senator McKinnon, Senator Egan, Senator Wilson, myself, Stedman. We have a quorum for business today. We're going to continue our overview with DOT. Dealing with the northern region. So we're going to go through the northern region and continue through, and I'd like to go ahead and turn it over to DOT so they could introduce themselves for the record, who they represent, and then take us through the presentation, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Ryan Anderson. I'm the Northern Region Director of the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I've been in this position since June of 2016, and I've worked with for DOT since 2000 in various capacities. For the presentation today, I would like to start out with a short overview of some of our phenomenal employees, and then move on to some of our regional focus areas with the construction program and some of our initiatives that we're currently working on. So with that, I would like to discuss some of our employees that make us truly as great as we are up in northern region. Brandy Millis is an employee that started with DOT about 3 years ago. We have a program at DOT where employees recognize other employees for the outstanding work that they've done. And Brandy was nominated as our Employee of the Year in Northern Region for some great work she was doing, really working with technology, the drones that you hear so often about. Out as an engineering technician working in the construction in the field, Brandy took the initiative to really find ways to use drones for things like calculating stockpile quantities, looking at culverts, things that, monitoring construction progress over the course of a construction year. So some really neat things going on there, some really great use of technology that helps improve efficiency and effectiveness for us, and really just a great overall way for us to keep getting better as an organization through our people. So I just wanted to recognize Brandy. The northern region, and on the map this is the area entirely outlined in yellow, is a very large region, and this is one of a big reason why our employees are so important to us in northern. Really, it's such a vast area to cover for the group that it's really important that we have top-notch employees. Our boundaries, as you can see, extend from the Arctic Ocean to the north. They extend from the Bering and Chukchi Seas to the west, all the way out to the border, the Canadian border to the east. We run down the YK Delta. We kind of follow the Alaska Range to the south from there, and then we follow the pipeline corridor down to Valdez. Within this border, we have several major routes. We have the Dalton Highway, the Elliott Highway, the Steese Highway, the entirety of the Richardson Highway, Alaska Highway, the Tok Cutoff, portions of the Parks Highway, just about from milepost 160, which is just south of Cantwell, north to Fairbanks. And then we also have a portion of the Glen Highway that's just east of, or just west of Nelchina, and then we go to Glen Allen from that perspective. We also, with those routes, come 376 bridges to maintain. As you can see from the table above, we have 8,920 lane miles of roads that we maintain. 37 maintenance stations, and then 101 airports. Along with those 101 airports, we have four Part 135 airports that have Alaska Airlines service, which would be Barrow, Kotzebue, Nome, and then Cordova. One of the focuses of administering a capital program in Northern Region that we've really taken on with kind of a team approach is really looking and trying to partner with our local governments. We have, within Northern Region, there's 124 communities. We have six boroughs. We have over 50 city governments. We have over 100 tribes. We have a metropolitan planning organization, which I will discuss a little later in more detail. And we also have tribal consortiums, as well as the landowners out there. So our real challenge, for us is how do we, get good input on projects, and how do we really move projects forward working with these communities. And it's a lot of them. One of our primary goals at DOT, of course, these days is to find efficiencies and do things more effective. The results-based alignment initiative is a big focus for us at these times. Also, that ties right into the 2018, you know, what we're working towards for construction this year, 2017, what we've accomplished. And then also we're really trying to focus on leveraging technology, innovative contracting, and then we have a Project Teams pilot program that we're working on. And these are all the points that I'm going to try to cover today with this presentation. So efficiency and effectiveness are primary goals we have to keep projects moving and to do things better and to keep improving. The results-based alignment initiative is a service delivery framework from which we measure the efficiency and effectiveness of the service delivered in support of our mission. We work through a lot of our we take a look a lot of at our how we're performing and try to measure for the purposes of making decisions. And so that's really the how we measure our success as we go forward and how we improve. Some of the ways we're doing this is to look at how overall in the program we're expending our dollars. We set goals at the beginning of each year for what we think we're going to deliver for that year in terms of capital programs. And then we track and we measure and we see how we did. This slide just shows how between federal fiscal year 16 and federal fiscal year 17 we've been measuring. And in as you can see in federal year 16, the results of the measurement. So typically what it's showing is that our goals are a little bit higher than what we're actually producing, but there's good reasons for that. For example, in 16, for the aviation program, we were planning on delivering about $47 million worth of capital programs, and we ended up delivering $74 million. That was a result of some other projects moving around, and we were able to have projects ready on the shelf, and we were able to put those in and get them funded and move forward. On the highway side, we planned on $217 million, and we delivered $168 million. Again, trying to build a shelf program, and sometimes we'll have projects that are on the shelf, which is always good for us, and the funding program may not accommodate them in a specific year, but they'll be ready for future years. The same thing would apply for 17. So it's a way to help us understand how we're doing delivering the program and then also resourcing how we're doing with internal and, you know, private sector resources and allocating to projects. We're also looking at the average project development time from project initiation to bid. And as was shown in the previous slide, the length of time to get a project from start and delivered is a measure that we are really value. How long does it take? This slide is a specific slide that shows the average time it takes to deliver a project. The projects are broken out into modernize and preserve, and whereas the modernized projects are the more complex projects, which are the big road reconstructions, the things that a lot of times have more involved environmental processes, and then the preserve are the more the mill and pave type jobs. We report this measure on a quarterly basis and record project length once a project goes to bid. So as you can see, you know, our preservation projects, they average between, you know, anywhere from 33 to 78 months to get out the door, and then our modernized projects are anywhere from 86 to 53 months. The point here is to look at trends and to get those trends moving in the right direction and to do things, you know, more efficiently. We also look at the design costs, and we do this at project award, reported upon project bid opening. Similar to the last one, we look at preservation projects and modernization projects, and we look at how we're doing in terms of what percent of the design of the construction cost did we spend on the design. From this slide, you can see for the preservation costs, we're anywhere from 9 to 17%. Modernization costs can be anywhere from 39 to 7%. Some of these spikes that you see where you'll see a 39% cost are the result of projects that have just been around for a long time. We have some projects that have been around since the 80s, And those and having projects around that long time drives costs up. The regulations keep changing. Work has to be redone. That's a real challenge for us, and we're focused to really try to improve and get these projects done on a quicker time frame. This last RBA slide shows the balance of contract versus in-house work in our region. As can be seen for the 2016 state fiscal year reporting period, based on actual expenditures, we expended $212 million in contractor payments, $19.6 million in consultant payments. Our in-house design costs were $12.6 million, and our in-house construction costs were $25.8 million. That works out to about, if you look at overall expenditures to contract work, it's about 85% of our yearly expenditures go to contract work, and then 15% are in-house. We use this measure to help us balance our in-house and contract work. There's a National Highway Research Cooperative report that suggests that DOTs that contract out all over the country, DOTs that contract out 50 to 70% of their work, there's some efficiencies that are found there. So, you know, we feel we're right in that range. So, of course, we're measuring because we want to deliver projects. What we do in design and construction is project delivery. This is what we've got going on for 2018 construction season. Overall, we have 25 rural northern region projects. And you can see from the map, they're spread out all over the state. Eight of these projects were projects that started last year and they're continuing the second year of construction. Six are new projects that we already bid. And so there's contracts in place, and they'll get started first thing this spring. Nine new projects are funded, and we'll be ready to bid in time for the 2018 season. So they'll be bidding between now and April. And then we also have two projects that are ready to go, but we don't have funding for them at this time. So those would be kind of shelf-type projects. And then in the Fairbanks area, we have 14 projects. Two projects began last year, the second year of construction. Two projects are already bid. Eight new projects are funded, and we'll be ready to bid in time for 2018 season. And again, we'll have two projects that are ready to go, and if funding's available, we'll be ready to move on them. So I just want to go through kind of a sample of some of the projects we're working on up in northern region. The Elliott Highway extends from north of Fairbanks from Fox to Haystack for this specific stretch of the project. We call it the Elliott Highway Milepost 0 to 12 rehabilitation. The road's in poor condition. It requires constant maintenance efforts to patch the pavement. This is one that moves a lot on us because of our subsurface frozen conditions up north. The project rehabilitates the roadway. It does some shoulder widening. We fix that hardware on there. And we also make a lot of drainage improvements to get the road to perform better. A project like this, the construction cost is estimated between $20 and $30 million. And then this project will bid in March. Bridges are a big focal point for us in northern region. We have about 25, 26 bridges right now that have deficiencies of some sort. And so we're focused on bridge projects. This specific project, the Alaska Highway Milepost 1309 Toke River Bridge Replacement, this bridge was built in 1944. It's real, you know. Old bridge. It's also the pinch point height-wise in the Alaska Highway. The 15-foot, 11-inch clearance that you see is the lowest clearance and does restrict what is allowable to be hauled on the Alaska Highway. So this project will get bid and go to construction this summer and be rebuilt or replaced. We also have in the Fairbanks area the old Nanana Highway Esther Hill Rehabilitation Project. This project is adjacent to the town of, it begins in the town of Esther, just right outside of Fairbanks, and then extends through a residential area, through that area. The road's in poor shape and has no shoulders. So the project improves the road surface, adds shoulders, and we get some drainage improvements. And this is a great example of a community-supported project. We had a lot of good community input in the design of this project, a lot of good public meetings, and it's a real supported project. University Avenue is a project that we're really excited to get complete this summer. This is a project that's been around since the 80s, and for one reason or another, it just hasn't gotten built. So when we took this on a few years ago to really try to move it forward, we took more of a team approach on this, and we decided to try a few new things. One thing that you'll see here, this intersection that we're highlighting, the Geist-Johansson University intersection, this has about 20,000 vehicles moving through it per day and has one of our highest crash rates in Fairbanks. So to really push and get this thing moving, we tried some innovative contracting, and we hired a contractor through the CMGC process, which I'll talk a little bit more about later. But that allowed us to bring a contractor on during the design and really help us to how we can put this project together and get work done quickly on it. And through that, we've been able to break out this intersection as something we can do this summer while other right-of-way acquisitions and other processes are going on for other parts of the project. Another thing we tried was a new right-of-way incentives program where we can provide incentives to landowners to purchase their land in the hopes that we can acquire right-of-way quicker to keep these projects going forward. So those were two things that we really feel like we're having success with as we move this project forward. The overall University Avenue project extends all the way from College Road to the north, and then it goes all the way to the Mitchell Expressway to the south. And so we are already with the contractor working on the segment that will lead south from the intersection we just talked about, which includes replacing the Chena River Bridge. And so having a contractor on board helping us with contractor staging, traffic control, this is a primary mover of traffic between North and South Fairbanks, and we'll be closing this section of road for a period of time when we have to rebuild the bridge, replace the bridge. So it's been a really great process to use as we move forward. And then we also have a project, Farmers Loop Resurfacing, which is a project that goes around the edge of town. We began working last year with it and built a portion of it that would actually connect to the university portion so we wouldn't have any conflicts when university comes online. And then this summer, the remainder will get rebuilt. So I wanted to spend a couple of minutes discussing the Fairbanks Metropolitan Area Transportation System. It's otherwise known as FMATS, and this entity is the local metropolitan planning organization for the urbanized portion of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. As you can see, the participating organizations include the state of Alaska, the Fairbanks North Star Borough, the city of Fairbanks, the city of North Pole, Fort Wainwright, the University of Alaska Fairbanks, Fairbanks International Airport, the freight industry, and the Alaska Railroad Corporation. FMATS was formed in April of 2003 as a consensus-based transportation policy-making body when the Fairbanks area was listed in the Federal Register of Qualifying Urban Areas for census in the 2000 census. The Federal Highway Administration and the Federal Transit Administration require the establishment of MPOs to facilitate increased local control of transportation investments. The Code of Federal Regulations and the U.S. Codes, Title 23, primarily stipulate the conditions of FMATS to receive federal funding. The MAP 21, followed by the FASTX, set the apportionments for FMATS and the federal funding that's received. So FMATS shares in an overall apportionment with communities that are between 5,000 and 200,000 in population. And the funds are dedicated through a transportation improvement program that's similar to the STIP and is approved, through the FMATS technical and policy boards who have members of these participating organizations. Currently, FMATS receives approximately $8 million a year in surface transportation funds.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For those following at home, MPO is the Metropolitan Planning Organization. That you were speaking about, Ryan, is that accurate?
That's correct.
And Anchorage has its own. The parameters for forming a metropolitan planning organization, or is it 50,000 people inside of a particular area for to create a particular density?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, I don't have those numbers at hand. I know it's an urban density that it's based on, and depending on the size of the community, the apportionments of funding are set. So if a community is between 5,000 and 200,000, you're in a specific category of apportionments. I believe for something like AMATS, it's a different category because the population is greater.
That's great.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted, for those at home, I believe the threshold for Fairbanks was 50,000 and a particular density. So the smaller communities don't qualify for FMATS. The next one on the radar might be the Mat-Su area to get to the density that they need to participate in that program. I just wanted smaller communities to know it's their money is distributed differently. These planning organizations receive their money and go through another entire process to be able to distribute and choose projects. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, there's Anchorage, Fairbanks, and everybody else.
Yep.
Okay, go ahead and continue.
I was going to highlight a few of the construction projects that FMATS is currently working on. The FMATS 2018 Surface Upgrades Project is a project where every year FMATS will go through and just repair roads, replace pavement, fix drainage problems, and it's really a staple of a yearly road upkeep program. This year, the 2018 Surface Upgrades Project will address approximately 13 roads, and we'll spend over $3 million on road improvements.
So when you're, if I could just real quick, we've had conversations, several committees over the years, about the life of the asphalt. Are you seeing any asphalt life issues in the northern region as far as excessive wear from, could be studded tires or just general wear and tear? And also, I'd like to hear a little bit about your rock sources, mm-hmm. Your rock densities, and do you have adequate supply of hard aggregate to extend the life of the asphalt?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the asphalt in Fairbanks, we have some different considerations versus, I think, other areas of the state. There's not as much stud usage in Fairbanks. It's just flatter, I think, is the reason. But the asphalt does have a lot of wear and tear just from the cold and the freezing thaw cycles. We see more of that kind of wear. And we also see a lot of undulating surfaces from frozen subsurfaces and movement. That just continues for us. So I think typically on an asphalt lifespan, and if we were considering the Fairbanks area, we can get 10 to 15 years out of an asphalt. Our aggregate in Fairbanks is fairly good. We have a lot of alluvial sources in Fairbanks. So we haven't had to struggle with the hard rock problems, I think, that Anchorage has struggled with. We just happen, I think with the Tanana River there and the geology, we have some decent aggregate to build roads with. In Fairbanks, we're real fortunate with that. We get into the outlying areas and a different story in the rural areas. We have a real challenge with materials in the rural areas. And a lot of places we have, there isn't rock, and we barge it in. So there's a real difference in between, the Fairbanks area and then if we were to look out rural or up north on the Dalton Highway as well.
Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, a long time ago I had Asphalt 101 that asked those same questions. The other factor, if you're getting 10 years life, what oil product are you using? Are you using an Alaska-based oil product or something coming in from somewhere else?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, a lot of our asphalt products come from a plant in North Pole. And so I do believe a lot of it's local, although when we contract out our contracts, that we don't specify. It's a performance-based specification, and we don't, specify where it has to come from.
Can we go ahead and continue? And let the record reflect Senator Bishop showed up later than the chairman, by the way. Go ahead and continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another project that FMATS is will go to construction as an FMAS project this summer is the Yukon Drive improvements. This is a project up on the university where we'll be replacing sidewalks, fixing sidewalks, and then repaving roads up at the university. These are you know, great projects organizations like FMATS, you know, are contributing to. FMATS also, even with their limited apportionments per year, does tackle some very large projects. This past year, we completed the Noble Street Upgrades Project. This, if, for those of you that have been to downtown Fairbanks, Noble Street is one of our primary, you know, downtown north-south connectors. This is a major utility relocation project. This had, we basically, as you can see, we rebuilt the road from property line to property line, one side to the other, including sidewalks and drainage improvements, and the whole road repave. This project was completed. We have a little bit of work left to do this summer for painting and some lighting work, but it was a real success. But projects like these are tough with the FMATS program has an $8 million a year apportionment, and this is about a $11, $12 million project. Also, for the upcoming 2018 season, I just wanted to remind folks of where you can find construction information. We have the Navigator, which is a real project-specific way to look at details of what's going on with a construction project. But we also have 511, which is where you can go now and find roadway conditions. And in the summer, it'll also be updated with the latest construction conditions. It links to Navigator, so if you want to learn more about a construction project, you can just click on the link. And then we're doing a lot of social media to really try to get out and reach people about what's going on, especially when we have, you know, unanticipated events on the roadways, avalanches, other types of road closures. We find that's a real effective way to reach out to people.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Anderson, could you tell the committee on this 511, I might be mistaken on programs, but your information is actually better than the Weather Service's to a degree, right? And aren't they coming to you for information? Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop. We in Fairbanks, we've been really working hard on weather information to manage our maintenance activities. You know, with the recent, in the recent past, we've had a lot more rain in the wintertime. We've had a lot more freezing type conditions that we're trying new technologies, you know, to keep the roads cleared. And so part of that is to have road weather conditions on the road, sensors mounted on the trucks, and to really track when it's appropriate to do things like apply de-icing chemicals or not. And part of this is we have a agreement with the University of Colorado that they actually have generated their own, I don't know if you call them algorithms or how they describe that in the weather world, but we get our own forecasts based on our weather sensors and equipment around Fairbanks. And a lot of times we have seen that they're much more responsive, you know, and we've had the Weather Service come and ask us questions about exactly how we're doing that. And so we're working with the Weather Service on, can this technology that we're using also, can they tap into it to help them out with forecasting around Fairbanks? Okay, with that, I would like to just talk a little bit about 2017 accomplishments. As we move forward with our programs, we really value not only, you know, always looking forward at what we're doing in 2018, but also reviewing what we accomplished and what we did well and maybe what we can do better, right? In Northern Region in 2017, we had 40 active construction projects in 16 communities, over $300 million in active construction contracts and over $100 million in active design contracts. One of the accomplishments that we like to talk about is the Parks Highway Milepost 239 to 252 project. This project starts just north of Denali Park, runs through Healy Canyon up to Healy. And this was a project that, you know, the road needed a lot of work, but also that canyon in Healy, you know, had some safety concerns. And so we spent some time on this project to stabilize that rock slope, and so, you know, we feel like that highway's in good shape now for 10 to 20 years here. We also had been talking to the Air Force about the upcoming F-35s coming to Eielson Air Force Base. The Air Force asked us to look at, to help them with establishing a south base access along the Richardson Highway. And so we worked with the Air Force and came up with a project to add some turning lanes and reconfigure that area to provide an intersection where all the equipment and the supplies coming in to build the infrastructure for the F-35s will have access through, and it won't be a big impediment to traffic. So that was a great project for us, and we got it done in a very short period of time. And again, bridges. You know, in 2017, we completed 7 bridge projects, and we continue to focus on bridges, you know, to cover those additional 26 that we need to be working on. Here's just a sample of what we did. Taylor Highway, the Chicken Creek Bridge. This is a bridge in very poor shape that we were able to replace. We have the tow cutoff, milepost 75, the Slanted Creek Bridge, we were able to replace. And then on the Richardson Highway, there were 2 bridges. Milepost 235, Ruby Creek, which is between Fairbanks and Delta Junction. And then, that's between Delta Junction and Glen Allen. And then milepost 295 is Banner Creek, which is between Fairbanks and Delta Junction. As we focus on becoming more efficient and effective, it's becoming clear that leveraging technology is increasingly more important for us. As we talked previously about our employee spotlight, our staff has really been focusing on, you know, looking at drone technologies as a way to become, you know, better in both acquiring imagery and measurement data and then sharing that data across the board. There are 3 different ways right now that we're really trying to leverage drone data and drones and become more efficient. This is a picture of the Susitna River Bridge, which is an older bridge on the Denali Highway. The foundation on this bridge has been moving on us, and you know, we really need to be monitoring that bridge close so that, you know, we recognize when it's time to go in and do something. We're using drone technology on this bridge to monitor change condition. It's change detection. To really, once a year, go through, we can fly the bridge with a drone, take it back to the office. In a short period of time, we can determine if there's been any elevation changes or any movement horizontally as well on the bridge. We also have been looking at several projects around Fairbanks where we've been testing drones with our surveyors on projects and being able to actually use the drones to acquire a lot of the horizontal and elevation data that we would go in and take, you know, and design a project to. These have been very successful tests. The data is extremely accurate. We always follow up with checking with our surveyors and the checks so that we know that. But it's really cost effective. I mean, some of these are, you know, in the neighborhood of 3 times less than a typical survey may cost us. So some really good efficiencies there. We're being cautious because it's new technology, and we want to, you know, really make sure we're covering all our bases on it, but there's some real potential there. And then, as we discussed previously, in construction, they're using drones to track the progress of construction projects, as well as, you know, things like aggregate stockpiles and measuring them, you know, in a short time period. So that's been pretty exciting for us as well. There's a lot of potential. There's a lot of things going out on the western coast with where, you know, we have coastal erosion threatening our infrastructure. And in places like Shishmaref or Point Hope, where, you know, if we can just get a good, you know, economic way to go out and survey what we've lost from year to year, really gives us a good handle on when it's time to get a project rolling and move on it. So really some neat things going on from that perspective. And so with technology, we get great efficiencies. But we also want to find ways to leverage the great experience of our contractors that are out there as we move forward and try to do projects, you know, cheaper and faster. So CMGC, which stands for Construction Manager General Contractor, is an alternative procurement method that's allowed by FHWA where a contractor is selected for a project early in the design phase. This allows the department to include the contractor in project early project decisions, and it also helps with both entities share risk. And this slide just kind of shows the difference between our different contracting methods. Our typical contracting method is design, bid, build. And then there's also a design build alternative procurement method, and then there's CMGC. We feel that with the CMGC method, the risk on a project is shared equally between the department and the state and a contractor, and with the shared decision-making process. Contractors that are involved in projects in the design phases, they're coming up with innovative solutions to problems, things that, you know, we wouldn't think of because we just don't have that expertise. And so that's been a real advantage. On University Avenue, there was some real innovative thinking about how to replace the Chena River Bridge in a very short period of time. We're trying a CMGC right now for a large construction project where we have to move a lot of dirt out on the Tok cutoff, and really seeing if, you know, one of the big risks we have is in material sites. And there's always an uncertainty, you know, on material sites, and if contractors can help us select material sites so we're not, you know, guessing. And there's also a big advantage having contractors help us with these designs in permitting. When we complete a permit and we have a CMGC project, the contractor has told us what we're going to do. And so the permit is what we're going to do. There's no guesswork involved. So there's been some real advantages from that perspective. It's not a procurement method for every project. You know, there's a lot of projects out there where we're just going out and doing mill and paves or whatnot, and, you know, design, bid, build makes a ton of sense. But for certain projects, the CMGC is something that we continue to want to try to test. And so at this point, we have three active CMGC contracts, and we're working on putting together two more.
Yes, Senator Bishop, you have a question?
Would CMGC, would you say that that might have less chance for a claim?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I would say that. Through the CMGC process, the price of the contract is negotiated. And there's a process to how you go through that, and it goes so far as there's a state group that's estimating, there's an independent estimator, and then there's the contractor all working to come up with the cost of a project. The idea is that if there is an area of risk, let's say it is deemed that, oh boy, the material sites don't have a lot of information and we need to go do some more work on that from a contractor's perspective, we would go do that in design, reduce that risk, and then when we move forward, we all agree, you know, that this is how we're moving forward. So that's the hope, that we would see less change orders and less claims as we move forward. And we're testing. So that's where we're testing it right now.
Thank you. Go ahead and continue.
The final focus area that I've been excited working on and I think has enormous potential is a Northern Region pilot program that we call teaming in construction for time and cost savings. And the point there is we're really focused on how we can keep working and achieving time and cost savings on projects. Everyone working to deliver capital projects are challenged every day by whether it's, you know, environmental and regulatory processes that require these starts and stops, or just our general organizational structures on how we're formed and finding pinch points, you know, when you need to get something done. If you remember from the RBA slides, we've had projects that take almost 8 years to get done. We thought we should ask ourselves, what would happen if we could get a project done in 8 months? What kind of approach would we take to go after something like that? A process where you could take a team approach and get the desired program outcomes of improved delivery time frames, reduced project costs, greater cost certainty, and then also to really have a more adaptive project delivery process, recognizing the constantly changing transportation needs of Alaska. This is something that we've really put a focus on over the past year, in Northern Region, and had some pretty, really, I should say really good results. We began by developing project demonstration teams where we would have a core management team, and as you can see, we would bring in all of the other entities to be a part of our team. So this is a different approach. We would go out and get, you know, talk to our funding agencies, talk to local stakeholders, the communities. We would talk to state agencies, federal agencies, and then really consider the local parameters of a project and try to bring folks in early on, as early as we could, to be a part of a team to move a project forward. We wanted to not only consider core competencies, you know, to make sure that we've got all the right people on the team that can design, you know, and manage construction of our infrastructure projects, but also to bring in these outside entities to contribute their knowledge and expertise as part of the team. The team members all have to work towards mutual goals, and we operate by a set of rules. We have regular check-in meetings, task trackers, and we want to measure our success. And we want to be honest with ourselves if we're not having success. Information sharing is a primary tenet of the team approach, and so we're also trying to utilize technology, you know, for information sharing amongst the team to really do a good job on this. When we came up with this team approach to try on projects, our commissioner said, "Well, this sounds like a great approach, but you gotta prove results." You know, and how are you going to do that? And so we came up with 21 project demonstration teams that were working on projects to really look for success. And we found over the past year some pretty amazing successes. The one that I'll bring up, we have a project out in Kivalina, and it's an evacuation and school site access road. Very challenging from the perspective of the environmental piece. You know, we have a lot of environmental resources out there, and the challenge was how quickly, you know, can we get an environmental document complete. By bringing in the community, by bringing in the state and federal agencies early on in the process, right even at the beginning when we were developing our what we call a class of action, deciding what type of environmental document was done, we were able to complete the environmental document in 11 months. The environmental documents like these can take you, you know, years to complete. So that was a big success for the team approach. It took a focus group of people from both internally DOT. We had private sector contractors as well as the outside entities, and really to move something like this forward.
Senator Egan, you had a question?
No, I just had a comment, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I just want to thank the public facilities portion of DOT for all the work they did on our world-class state museum, the new Andrew P. Kashavir Museum, $140 million project. It was on time and it was under budget, thanks to CMCG. It was.
For those watching at home, we'll have the South
GC
Coastal Region coming up here, I think, at the next meeting, and we can go into some of the success stories, and I assume that this design construction team approach to try to move things down into the 8-month year range versus multiple years, is that beyond the northern region, or is DOT doing this in all three regions, or is this just a demo in the northern region, or can you give me a little broader background to who's doing this?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is a pilot program in Northern Region. We are documenting, you know, as we go, how we're doing it, our successes, our challenges, and sharing with the other regions as we go. So it is something that we're sharing broadly, but Northern Region is taking these first steps on the demonstration projects.
That's fine. Okay, go ahead and continue.
The other part that's important to recognize with these time savings are the cost savings. So on a project like we're working on out at Kivalina, you know, we were looking at when you can do an environmental document in 11 months, rather than having a 5 to 10 or more percent design cost we're looking at less than 1% on that project. So there's really some drastic implications there if you can really move projects like that forward. And we think there's a good approach here that we can improve on and just keep doing these types of things.
For when we go to broader regions, you know, we've had projects in the southern region here that have been out 10 years. If we got them to 5 years or 4 years, it would be a huge success. But if you could do it in anywhere close to a year, they'll probably put a statue up there and finance for you, because that would be, I think it would be incredible if we could turn projects that fast. And we could actually be more proactive in manipulating the economy and downturns, and it would be a very valuable tool for us as policymakers to have, because if we try to respond to a downturn now, we can't get a project out in time. By then, it's, you know, the economic course has moved on and makes it challenging. So I think it's a good idea. I don't know who came up with the process to try this pilot program, but I think it's a good idea, and it'd be nice to have a report back in a year or what have you from DOT on how successful it was, and if it's successful, how what the plans are on spreading it to the other regions. Because it seems like the northern region is the stellar region of the state as far as relationships with contractors and productivity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The team approach, I think, is what the northern region I continue to communicate, and I think really is a great communication. The other real benefit to the team approach in this fashion, one of the challenges we'll have at our level is overturn on projects where people may retire, people leave for one reason or another, or get reassigned to other projects. When we take a team approach, that same group of people, there's a whole group of people there that are familiar with the project that keep pushing it forward, and that's another one of the big successes we've seen with this approach and how we move it forward. So appreciate the comments.
If I could you give us kind of an idea? I know you're about at the end of your presentation here, but and I recognize all the regions are different in size, because that was one of your first slides as far as the sheer scale of what you're dealing with. Slide number 3. But contractors, how many contractors do you guys have available in the northern region that have bonding capacity, say, of 10 million plus?
Mr. Chair, it's a good question. I couldn't give you exact numbers. If I had to guess, as an example, on a recent Western District project where we opened bids, we got 7 bidders. That was out on the West Coast. Typically, if we're in the Fairbanks area, we'll get anywhere between 5 and 10 bidders, depending on the project and the project size.
Yeah. And maybe we can get a response back from the other regions on that same question. I'm a little concerned on the Southeast region where we might we are having fewer and fewer contractors, and you know, competition is good. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to be down to one. So it's basically half a dozen on 10 million plus projects, or a little more, depending on the economy and how hungry the boys are.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yeah, I believe that's correct.
Can you go ahead and continue with your slide?
My last slide, again, is on this project delivery team's concept and this team approach we're taking. There's going back to how do you move forward with teams and really focus on improving and where we put our efforts. One thing that we found is a focus on planning. Really, we can save ourselves a lot of time before these projects go to a design phase by really having some effort put in, you know, in planning. And it's more planning than just what may have been construed as corridor planning in the past. It's including a lot of this environmental considerations that we're working through today in the planning processes, and really having a really well thought out project before we move forward and into the design phase. We're also team support. You know, we want active participation. We want we're really pushing for federal agency participation at all phases of our project development. So even in the planning phase, we want the federal agencies there with us, and we're documenting decisions. And so then as we move forward, everyone's on the same page that this is a good project and it needs to move forward. The flexibility to perform concurrent processes is a huge one right now, not only, you know, at our state level, but on the national level. And this is where we're just looking at reducing duplicative efforts. You get into these environmental processes, and, you know, we'll go through environmental documents, and then we'll go through the same agencies for permitting. And there's, you know, just a way to consolidate this, and so that we can save a lot of time by going through and having decisions made once and not revisiting issues over and over again. The innovative contracting, we really want to push on that. We believe there's a lot of success in partnering with contractors early on. And then community economic development. We all know that, you know, community projects are born in the communities, and the communities have a huge stake in these projects, and they need to be included as the projects developed, and ways we can partner with communities and leverage what they have to offer these days, you know, when we're dealing with match. And the funding issues, there's communities that have funding out there, and we want to take advantage of that as well. So working through that.
So did you, in your career with DOT, have you been with Northern Region the entire time?
Mr. Chair, yes, sir, I have.
And does the regions cross-train the management to different regions, or are you pretty much siloed into the Northern Region?
Mr. Chair, yes, we do have some cross-training going on. There's been a lot of talk about a more programmatic way to do that. We share resources at times in construction primarily. We also share with, you know, bridge design and some of the other functions. We move folks around so folks get experience in those different areas. We also, you know, we had an EIT program where folks can move around and get experience in the different regions as well.
Commissioner was still here. I see he had to leave. But so do you sit around with the commissioner and other regional heads and talk about what works and what doesn't work in your different regions? Or how does the inner workings of DOT cross-pollinate what's going right and what's going maybe not so right in their particular areas?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that, you know, the performance measure, the results-based alignment is really, we get together on a quarterly basis, and we're looking at all of our results and how we're doing, and things like, you know, it's design costs, it's times to get projects out, it's we're looking at construction costs. You know, we look at on the maintenance and the safety side as well. You know, we're looking at how we're doing from that perspective, because really it's the data that's going to drive how well we want to look at it from that perspective on how well we're doing. So we do get together and do that. And then with these pilot programs, we're always talking about them. You know, in Northern Region, we've got a group of people up there that get real excited about these things. So it's, you know, we can get those going and start these initiatives.
I think it's a great idea to put a team approach in if we can get it down to anywhere close to a year. I mean, it's a huge benefit to the organization and the state.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Other questions, Senator Wilson, and then Senator Bishop.
Yeah, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a couple of just clarifying questions. And when you said you have projects going back to the 80s, I think you mentioned that from slide 8. You mentioned it again in Fairbanks. Is that just projects that just sit on the shelf that were just ideas of construction projects, or projects that were actually started 30 years, 35 years ago that we're just haven't really completed yet? I just want to clarify that.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Wilson. It's a little bit of both. The projects will, as I understand in the past, you know, projects will get started, they get moving in a certain direction, and then maybe a funding program would slip, and there wouldn't be funding for it, so it would get put on a shelf for a while. Then it would get pulled back out, and then, of course, a lot of things change over time in terms of regulations, design standards, whatever, and then you have to go and redo, you know. And so that's been a cycle for some of these projects over a period of time. We're getting out of that cycle with these approaches we're taking now and real focused on getting you know, those kind of projects done. And we've had success. I think there's been three kind of projects that have been around for a long time over the past 2 years that we've delivered. And so when we get a project like University, we're real excited to deliver it because we really want to get those projects, you know, done.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Apologize for being late, but I was working another issue that's important to this committee. So anyway, thanks. I was going to send you a letter, but I was home this last weekend. You guys have done a marvelous job of hauling snow off of some of the major thoroughfares. It looks like you've had the blower out and the trucks moving a lot of snow, and it looks timely because we're supposed to get another 6 or 7 inches tonight. So tell your crew thanks for that. And I know the traveling public appreciates it, but also we've got a big walking public and biking public that really appreciates having sidewalks that they can get up and down. So we appreciate that. On your community economic development bullet, would it be safe to say that I'd like a comment on this, that you're reaching out, and you could also include tribes in that too, right? Native corporations, where you're working together and leveraging it. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes, absolutely. We have areas where tribes are going to contribute match funds for projects. They've also offered up maintenance funds for projects. And then we've also even had some Native corporations that are offering up land as a right-of-way for a project. So absolutely, those are great partnerships.
Thank you.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also a part of that community involvement, we hear a lot about the private-public partnerships, and a part of the northern region is that corridor, I guess, between going up the parks where plow services and folks wishing that the state would possibly have more contracts or more private partnerships with the entities that could maybe be a little bit more responsive and more nimble to, instead of getting those maintenance facility from going Willow north, Willow can focus on south and meet that demand between Willow and Palmer. I'm just trying to figure out where the DOT is heading and sort of that, sort of looking more toward that public partner partnership, and also with new road construction and maintenance of some of those other areas more a little bit north of Fairbanks.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Wilson. So on the Parks Highway, for that area, we have a Cantwell station that, you know, we have our staffing, you know, at those stations has been reduced, but we have typically 2 to 3 people on at any one time that will cover, you know, they typically run 30 miles each way, you know, north and south, and cover those areas. We haven't, you know, we've looked at public-private partnerships in the past. At this time, it's not something that we're proposing, I guess, is how I would say it.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two questions. On slide 35, you just answered Senator Bishop about tribes being able to match money. Are we assisting regional corporations or tribal government to go after a specific set of federal funds, or is that competing with the regional funding? There's a separate pot of money that Alaska has not competed well in that was designated at a federal level for tribes, and Alaska had not won those grants up until this administration took over. I'm wondering if we've pursued supporting tribes and going after those funds.
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, the Tiger Grant funds is a funding source that, you know, DOT has applied for on several projects. I also am aware that the tribes apply for those funds as well. Typically, we like to have the communication with the tribes as well as other groups, whether we have cities too that go after those funds, so that we're all working on that together. We may not necessarily assist them in going after those funds, but we would be communicating and we'd all be aligned, so we're not competing against each other. We're all working together towards if there's a specific project that is in, you know, is a focus point.
So two specific points. What does TIGER stand for? And then is it a separate allocation of fundings outside of the normal federal funding stream?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, I will have to get back to you on what TIGER stands for. But it is a separate program. I'm not sure if it's administered by the Federal Highway Administration. I do believe it is, but we'll get back to you on that as well.
Yeah, we can have the DOT get back to the committee on that, and they could sum up the major sources. And we had that the other day, and I just can't recall it off the top of my head, but we'll have it delivered to us by the planner.
Mr. Chairman.
He's got it all memorized.
Certainly.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On slide 15, when you were speaking, you talked about incentives that you were doing for right-of-way acquisitions, and I'm wondering what those incentives are and who's paying for them.
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, I can get back to you with the details on those incentives. It typically is a time incentive that if, you know, once we make it's allowable by the Federal Highway Administration, so the federal funds are able to be used for this. And it's a program where if we make an offer to a landowner, if they respond within a certain period of time, there's a cash incentive provided. We'll get back to you with the details.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Egan. Okay. Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my last question here is about the bridges. You mentioned, I think, in the northern region you have 26 bridges that are in construction and repair. Do you have sort of a priority or a status of the degradation of some of those bridges, and not just in this district, I guess for all the districts, if we can come back to the committee with sort of a number or sort of a priority list of some of those bridges and their severity of their wear?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Wilson, yes, we do have a statewide list that does prioritize our bridges. One thing that does factor in, though, on when we're able to build them is the project delivery constraints, you know, depending on if there's some environmental regulatory requirements that take us a little bit longer to get through or whatnot and actually delivering the project. Some bridges are real simple, some maybe not so. So that does factor in. But we do have that list that can be provided.
There's a reasonable chance we're going to have a gas line. Going to be a huge construction project, and DOT is going to be core in as far as moving goods and materials up to the slope. So I'm just kind of curious how Northern Region's looking at handling that, both potentially preparing for it and then the aftermath of that construction period, or if at all, or what you guys conversations you're having to deal with that issue.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we have been discussing that. The timing of the pipeline is very important to us. We have a map right now that shows all the projects that are currently scheduled within the pipeline corridor, and it's statewide. We work with our counterparts in the other regions and get that together. And then the idea is once it becomes clearer on when a gas pipeline construction may occur, we would be looking at those projects pretty hard on what makes sense to construct before the line or after the pipeline construction, understanding that we probably don't want a lot of construction projects happening during the pipeline construction and to adjust as we go to make sure that, you know, everything is set for a pipeline to be constructed. So that's the approach we're taking right now. We're also looking in a planning sense of areas where we may have some constrictions to our infrastructure that if we can get them improved before the pipeline is built, it may facilitate easier transport of all the supplies and the pipe.
I think what we'll do here for the committee, we'll have the regions, which we're calling now, we've had airports, and when we get done with that, which won't take much longer, there's only a couple more regions, we should have a hearing on just that subject in itself, preparation for construction of the gas line, so we have a better idea of kind of what's going on, and also will help the finance committee maybe when the time comes to zero in on some of the more pertinent stuff if we can take care of some of the mundane stuff here. So we'll have the staff get with DOT and get that put together. And then it crosses three regions, all regions. So we'll isolate it as a subject matter in itself. Any other questions for the department? We rarely get the man from the northern region in front of us. Take this opportunity. Seeing none, we'll concludes the presentation today. Do you have any final comments from the Northern Region or anything?
Thank you very much for having me today, and yeah, I appreciate the opportunity and to kind of showcase what we're doing and all of our people up north and what they're doing. It's pretty phenomenal to be in this position with that.
We're looking forward to further feedback on the one-year time horizon for a project, getting it out. And I do take my hat off to DOT to even put that on the table. That's a tight timeline. Mm-hmm. I know you used 8 months, but I'm giving you a couple extra.
Appreciate that.
And we'll have to keep tabs of that. And if it works, make sure it gets implemented in other regions. With that, we're adjourned today. We'll continue these presentations starting with the next meeting. We are adjourned.